Welcome to the ASHP Official Podcast, your guide to issues related to medication use, public health, and the profession of pharmacy.
Welcome back to the ASHP Pharmacy Leadership Podcast, hosted by the Pharmacy Administration and Leadership Residence Collaborative, or PALRC. My name is Jake Noble, PGY1 HSPAL Pharmacy Resident at Mayo Clinic, and I sincerely appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to join us. This series is dedicated to exploring various career topics with pharmacy leaders from across the nation. In today's episode, we'll be discussing job interviews featuring Dr. Brooks Patterson, a PGY1 HSPAL pharmacy resident at Emory Healthcare, Dr. Vishal Shah, specialty pharmacy manager at Emory Healthcare, Dr. Alyssa Billmeyer, director of specialty and retail pharmacy at Emory Healthcare, and Dr. Kofi Ando, home infusion pharmacy manager at UC Davis Health. Navigating the interview process in the pharmacy profession can be challenging. Through this discussion, Dr. Shaw, Dr. Billmeyer, and Dr. Ando will share their insights and leadership pearls when it comes to gearing up for the preparation process and things to potentially expect during interviews. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the discussion.
Hi, everyone. It's exciting to be here. Excited to talk to you all today. So we'll go ahead and jump into our discussion about job interviews here. So for the first question that I have today, is focused more so on prepping for the interview itself. So interviews themselves are extremely intimidating and can be very difficult to prepare for. So how do you all best recommend candidates prepare for the actual interview day?
Brooks, I can take this one. This is Alyssa. What I always tell my students or my residents or even my coworkers who are thinking about starting the interview process is the best place to start is to think about 5 to 10 scenarios that you want to highlight during your interview process. Thinking of them in scenarios versus answering a question is usually the easier way to answer any question that comes your way. For instance, you know, maybe it's a question you didn't prepare for, but probably one of your scenarios has an answer to that. So if you can think of a scenario rather than the question, that's usually my biggest preparation tip. The others that I give many people when they're asking for feedback for preparing for an interview are to practice your personal mission statement and practice your why. If you don't have a personal mission statement, it's a really good place to understand what your true north is. Coming up with the reason of why you're interviewing for that job. What are you going to contribute back to that organization? And that will also help you come across as a genuine individual when you're talking to that organization as well. And then lastly, I think this is just a given, but making sure you know the organization and interview panel. If you can do your prep work, ask for that itinerary ahead of time to see who's going to be part of that interview panel and stalk them on LinkedIn, look them up and see what research projects they've done in the past. Understanding and targeting questions to them is also going to be incredibly helpful. I don't know, Kofi, do you have anything you'd like to add on to that?
Yeah, I think you hit on a good bit of what I was going to say as well. And I would say some additional points that I consider or I think of, which piggybacks off what you said. Knowing your personal why, of course, knowing why the org, and then being very confident and knowledgeable about why you for the role. I think that's something that students, particularly in new practitioners, aren't as comfortable highlighting their value proposition, particularly. And I think understanding why you for the role, the value you bring to the organization going into the interview is very important. So I like to keen in on 3 characteristics about myself prior to an interview that I could speak to different scenarios about, that others can speak to these characteristics they've seen in me regarding teams that I work with, teams I work for, people that I have managed. Know your CV. So another philosophy that I like to live by is if I cannot confidently speak to an item on my CV in detail, I will remove it. And so I know a lot of times, especially as maybe graduating residents interviewing for a job, you might want to beef up your CV, but I actually would recommend against beefing up your CV if you can't speak to your direct involvement in something that is noted on your CV or exactly what you did. So those are some other things that I was thinking about to add on. And then lastly, I would say, make sure you prepare questions. I think Dr. Billmeyer mentioned preparing questions targeted towards the audience, but prepare questions that are beneficial for you. Like, what do you want to ask that would help you in your decision making? Not a question that you feel they would like to hear. The questions are really are for you as you help to decide on which role is best for you.
Excellent. Thank you for the great answers for that question. With that, I'll go ahead and jump into our second question here, which is focused on actual interview day itself. So from the point of the interviewer, you have already looked at your applicant's CV and looked over their application materials. So you probably have a pretty good idea in your head of who your interviewee is. So what tips would you give to interviewees to help make a very strong first impression in the interview?
Yeah, thank you, Brooks. I can take this one. I think first and foremost, listening to the advice that Alyssa and Kofi just gave on preparing for interviews can really go a long way in making a good first impression. I think another great piece of advice for an interviewee is understanding that the interview really starts right when you enter the room. I think it's important to think about different ways to be engaged in getting to know your interviewers well before the official interview portion starts. And I think being curious and being engaged and asking questions can really go a long way. And, you know, a good example I often think of is a lot of interviews can sometimes start with tours. And so when you're going on a tour, paying attention to your surroundings, saying hello to the people around you, not being afraid to ask questions, I really think can go a long way. And even though those people aren't officially in your interview, I think those impressions can really, really go a long way.
Dr. Shaw, I'll kind of add on to the tour thing. I think that even adding during the tour, when you're doing that walking tour, if you are doing a physical on-site interview, is making sure you're keeping up with the team too. Don't like walk slower than the rest of the group and making sure you're keeping up. I think that's just a funny one to add that I am often pretty observant on when I'm actually the person interviewing other individuals. But kind of making that first impression, it's hard, especially I think it's really hard when this day and age, everything's going on via Zoom or a Microsoft Teams interview. And so I think that's maybe the more challenging aspect for your personality to shine through. I think it's easy to still continue to make eye contact, be engaged over Zoom, but you have to try a little bit harder, especially because it's very easy to just jump over to the other screen and read your answers that are there too. I think for me, especially on the Zoom type of interview, in order to make a good first impression, is just making sure you're prepared and ready ahead of time. Are you in the right spot? How's your internet connection working? Are you not in your car doing the Zoom? I cannot tell you how many times I've interviewed a candidate while they're sitting in the car outside of their place of work. Understandable that, you know, that happens in some situations, but if you can do anything to prevent that, or at least warn the person that you're interviewing with ahead of time that, you know, I'm so sorry, this is the only type thing I can make do right now. I think that's always the best process. And then being authentic and genuine. I think a lot of us, especially when it's hiring and interviewing for a manager position, that first position out of residency, we're often asked to do a presentation. And this is actually something I've gotten from, honestly, some of our residency candidates. So you all probably already know about this. But, you know, trying to make those PowerPoint presentations, even if it's a more formal one about a project you implemented or a clinical topic, you know, trying to make those a little bit more personalized to you. Maybe take a few slides to share a little bit about you and your background and something that they don't see on your resume. And I think that's really fun for your personality, a fun spot for your personality to shine out and compared to the rest of the individuals as well.
Great. Thank you for sharing this. I really appreciated the way that you talked about letting your personality shine and being genuine and asking questions. I think that those are all really important aspects to consider as well. So going forward, talking a little bit more about the interview itself, specifically focusing on interview questions. So can you provide a little bit of insight into the types of questions or scenarios that are commonly asked in interviews for pharmacy management positions, and specifically how can candidates stand out among others through their responses?
Yeah, I can tackle this one. And so when thinking about the types of interview questions that you can be asked, I wish I knew all the questions that you could ask in an interview, but I can give some insight on the different types of questions that can be asked. So typically in pharmacy management interviews, or honestly, most interviews now that take place, the types of questions you typically see are considered to be your behavioral-based or your situational-based questions. And these questions are really based on the theory that past actions from an individual are a really strong indicator for future behaviors compared to more hypothetical situations. And so when thinking about different types of questions
Some common examples that I can think of just from my own experiences can include questions like, tell me about a time you dealt with conflict between two individuals. Tell me about a time that you failed when trying to achieve a task. Tell me about a time that you disagreed with someone. I think when thinking about these different types of behavioral-based questions, there's never really a right or wrong answer to these questions. But I think one important thing to keep in mind when answering these questions is something that many of you have probably been exposed to in the past, but it's something called the STAR method. And so when thinking about the STAR method, it can really be broken down into four categories or four approaches to answering the question. And that includes the situation, the task, and the action, and the result. And so when thinking about the STAR method, you're really starting off your answer to a question focusing on the situation and the task at hand. But to answer your question, Brooks, I think a really great way candidates can stand out is really showcasing what their action was in that specific situation and ultimately what the result was. Because at the end of the day, you'll be faced with all different types of situations and tasks when starting a new job. But again, it goes back to previous actions are a really good indicator for what future actions might look like as well. And so look, I'm also looking forward to hearing what other panelists have to say as well.
Yeah, I could piggyback off of Dr. Shah here. From my perspective, one of the most important things Dr. Shah mentioned, that STAR method, it never leaves you no matter how high you may climb the rankings within the health system practice. So one pitfall that I've noticed amongst candidates that I've interviewed in various positions, and even something that I have to tell myself to be aware of, in practicing the STAR method in response to a scenario-based question, don't lose yourself in the situation and forget to tie the loop with what you did and how you assess the situation itself. I see that all the time. You know, we set the table, we're excited to explain the scenario, and then we just leave this open-ended paradigm of, okay, well, what did this candidate do? Right? And some interviewers won't say anything. They won't ask a follow-up. Others might ask a follow-up just to understand exactly what you did. I think it's important for candidates to be cognizant, to really, really hone in and focus on what the assessment and results was of the scenario you're highlighting. So don't lose sight of that. Of course, having those 5 to 10 scenarios that Dr. Bill Meyer mentioned going into the interview that you could pull from at any time, I think that's very important. And then practicing just in general, you're always going to likely start off in some form or facet with the tell me about yourself, right? So your elevator pitch is very important. And so the elevator pitch, this is not law by any means, but you know, I should get who you are, what you do, why you show you're qualified for the role, what are some experiences you have that you could talk to the role about, and then, you know, wrapping it with a bow tie with thank you for your time, welcoming any questions. I think practicing your elevator pitch can look different. One day you might have 5 minutes, another day you might have 30 seconds with the CEO of a company. And so I think it's very important to get that down pat, but I don't have much else outside of that to add that, you know, Dr. Shah already talked about.
Great. Thank you all. I really appreciated the shout out to the STAR method. Love that. And tried to implement that when I was interviewing for residency as well. So going into our next question, I wanted to talk a little bit about negotiation during an interview. So many pharmacy managers may intend on negotiating things such as salaries, moving expenses, start dates, conferences, et cetera, in their interviews. So what are your thoughts on addressing these in the interview itself? And what strategies would you recommend to engage in these discussions?
That's the million-dollar question, Dr. Patterson. I think this is the question that we all kind of stress about as we're going and approaching that new position. There's no right or wrong to this process, but I think the best advice that I can give is to make sure that you're being tactful throughout the entire process. So the question really is trying to understand what the salary is or when your start date is. You know, that's probably more of a conversation that you can definitely ask during the interview, but maybe reserve that for some time, like one-on-one with the person who is your hiring manager. Don't ask that in front of a panel of 400 different people or, you know, multiple different types of people that may or may not even be part of that process of your salary or even your start date. I think the other misconception a lot is, especially if you're going into a large academic medical center or health system, is that the hiring manager is really the person helping you and doing the negotiation for your salary that you're coming into. That's really the part that jumps in where HR is usually the people who take over that salary negotiation part.
I have never really been the person who is going to say, yes, this person should or should not get a higher salary, or nor am I the person upfront recommending what salary an individual starts with. It's all an equity-based decision from the HR standpoint. Now, one of the things that I've heard so many times in the last, particularly the last 2 years, is that residents are told that they cannot negotiate positions or salaries outside of right after they get out of the residency. I'm going to start this position and I was told I can't negotiate. I think that is not necessarily true. And if it is true, you should still negotiate and see what you can do with that. Maybe it is, hey, can I take a 2 week vacation, you know, a month and a half into me starting, and, you know, a tiny little negotiation, or maybe it's a wiggling around your start date. But my biggest advice, and the best advice that you're going to have with negotiating your salary, is negotiating your salary. If you can get even a little bit of a bump in that salary from what you were first given to what you're going to end up accepting, that's going to help set you up for success so many years down the road. That's going to be what is helping you with your merit. That's what your merit increases are going to be based off of. That's what's going to be helping you decide what your next salary is at your next job. Everything is kind of based off of this one position right outside of your residency. And so as much as you can do to at least try to negotiate, I say go for it. You might get shot down. Some success that I've seen in the past is if someone already has a job offer from another organization, but they prefer to wanting to go to this other organization that's also offering them a job, you know, why don't you know, it's totally okay to share that job offer and that salary amount. I actually highly encourage you sharing that with the hiring manager and or HR department who is helping you with that salary as well too. Other things is understanding kind of the market in that area. You know, a quick Google search can tell you a little bit about the area and the average salaries within that area. My other thing, and I already touched base on this a little bit, is just making sure you're really truly being tactful during this process. I've been told by other hiring managers, I felt it myself before, is that sometimes, especially people who are new to this negotiating game, it comes across as being a little greedy too. So if you're going to continuously like talk to me and negotiate to me of, you know, you told me that I'm not going to get a permanent office. I need a permanent office in order to come to this location, and you're going to hound on that and like continuously follow up with me on that. You know, that starts to put a sour spot in my mind, right? And maybe that's me coming back and saying, is this the right decision I want to make? Is this the hill that they're going to die on to come into this position? So making sure you know, okay, is this make or break? You know, this is the organization I want to go to. Is an extra day here or there going to be the end of the world, or can it be okay if I just take that job how it is today? So that's kind of my recommendations. I don't know, Dr. Shaw, do you have anything that you want to add?
Yeah, I think you did a great job explaining that, and so really appreciate your insight. I think what you said was spot on in terms of, I think, being very respectful and thoughtful throughout the entire process as well is extremely important. I think specifically for newer residents that are looking for their first job outside of residency, I agree that there's a ton of misconceptions maybe around the negotiations related to your salary and your start date. I think the statement I always make is the worst thing they can do is say no, and you're kind of back to where you are with your original job. So I think that's more than okay. And I think another common misconception that is sometimes had is that when you enter an organization, people might feel a certain way if you're starting later than others, or if you're negotiating your salary a little bit more. But just based on my experience alone, I can assure you that no one else is really thinking about any of those things. And sometimes you yourself are kind of getting caught up in what other people might be thinking too. So if you're a resident out there looking for jobs and you're considering on starting the middle of August versus the end of July, and you're kind of going back and forth because you don't know whether or not that extra 2 weeks is going to make a difference for you, I would encourage you to at least ask to say, hey, can I get that extra week or two? Because once you do start your primary role, there's not going to be many other moments where you have that extended period of time off between residency and your next job. So just a little bit of insight, just specifically for newer graduating residents.
Perfect. Thank you both so much. For the next question, I want to talk a little bit about deciding between different opportunities if you have those offers. So for those who have interviewed for multiple positions and having a little bit of difficulty trying to figure out which opportunity they want to pursue, what tips might you give those in that position to help them with their decisions?
Yeah, Brooks, I could start us off on this one. Navigating multiple interviews is something that I was doing less than a year ago. This is very fresh for me, so happy to provide insight for our collective community on this. So I think the most important thing is understanding what you are looking for going into the process outside of one respective job, outside of one respective specialty. Understanding what you are looking for helps to ground you and root you in terms of how you navigate different interviews and different opportunities, right? So for me, I like putting things on paper. So that was me writing down my preferences, right? So what type of job am I looking for postgraduate? What are some of my non-negotiables? What are some things that are preferences, but if I don't have them, it's not going to really make a difference? These are all things you can write down, right? Even developing a pros and cons list as you go through the interview process. So you interview with one company, immediately following, you're writing down pros and cons of the interview day, of the team, of the role. And then other things that you could consider as well, not just pros and cons of the professional aspect of the role, but a big, big, big ticket item for me is also, what does personal life look like? What gut feelings did you get on interview day that would allude to what your personal life will look like, especially coming out of residency and you're trying to realign your work-life integration and balance, correct? So I think that's not something to be undermined. And then other thing, potential things to consider, right? Salary benefits, which, you know, we just talked on. Who is your boss going to be? What relationship will you have with your boss? I think your boss is probably the most important thing to consider in taking a job, specifically a first job straight out of residency. Other things you might be thinking about, upward mobility, you know, areas of oversight, direct accountability. So I think sometimes we get caught up in titles. Titles does not tell the full story. And you won't know that until you interview and understand exactly what your oversight will be. So a supervisor at one company can be doing the job of a manager at another company. The manager at one company can be doing the job of a director, so on and so forth. And then other things that have come up specifically for me, HSPAL involvement. I think each of us on here love to be involved with learners. And so I was inquiring about my involvement with residency training, community support, community engagement, and then also leadership visibility in terms of what your initiatives, how supported are your initiatives and how will they be fared across executive leadership, et cetera. So these are just a couple things to ensure you're documenting and cross-referencing as you're going through the process. But I'll pass it off to Dr. Shah to provide any additional insight you all may have. So,
thank you. And Dr. Ando, I absolutely loved everything you just said. I know this is a podcast, but I was still here nodding my head saying, yes, I do agree with every single thing that you just mentioned. I think the biggest thing for me to kind of add on with what you were just sharing is seeking advice from your mentors as you're going into these multiple options and opportunities that come your way. I think if anything, it's those around you that know you the best. And I think being able to ask them for their advice also goes a long way. Piggybacking off additionally what you said as well, I think is understanding that no job, whichever way you look at it, is going to be considered easy. And so thinking about the type of support and mentorship you receive is extremely important when thinking about a role. I'm really fortunate that my boss is actually one of my biggest mentors and supporters too. So I really do appreciate that aspect of my role as well. I think another big thing to think about when thinking about navigating different job opportunities is thinking about what your short-term and long-term goals are. I think different roles and opportunities will check different boxes when it comes to your different short-term goals and long-term goals that you're hoping to accomplish. And I think, Dr. Ando, you did a good job kind of highlighting some of those things regarding involvement with residency training, working on different projects, upward mobility, and some of those other great things that you mentioned. And then the last thing I'd kind of want to share about selecting between multiple jobs is just understanding that just because you don't pursue a certain role at a certain point in your career doesn't mean that that opportunity is totally shut out. And if anything, I would still encourage you to continue to be engaged with different individuals across different service lines and different areas just to continue to get to know those areas as well. And so those are just some tidbits regarding navigating multiple interviews and multiple job opportunities.
Great. Thank you for that, Dr. Ando, Dr. Shah. So I want to wrap up with a question for our newer HSPAL grads. So interviewing for jobs straight out of residency can be a lot, especially in the scenario where you might be opposite of a candidate who might be a little bit more of a seasoned and experienced manager. So what tips would you give new HSPAL residency graduates in this type of scenario?
I think I'd say first and foremost, don't focus on your competition. If you can, just not even ask. That might help you, you know, more focus on what you have to bring versus what your competition is. I think in some scenarios, you might be interviewing at the organization you're working at, and you might know even the individual who is, you know, competitively applying for this position with you. Or, you know, it might be just that you're the hiring manager had already shared with you who is interviewing for that process. So I think my tips are just, I think Dr. Endo said this earlier in the podcast, but, you know, just really focusing on what you have to bring to the table, why you're the right person. What is your North Star? What is that experience that you have that no other person has? And if you can share that with the team, I think that's going to help set you apart. I think we all already know this, especially if we are actively an HSPAL resident or a past graduate of an HSPAL program. But I think that there is a lot of hesitation out there from staff to say, oh my goodness, I've had this manager that was in this position for X plus years before, and now we're considering hiring someone who just graduated from a residency program. What do they know? And I think this is a really good portion of the interview to show what your experience has been, what your expertise is, why you are that right person. So talk to them about, you know, the HR experience that you had and how you handled that difficult HR situation. I know we've all had that, and especially as a PGY2 HSPAL, you know, talk about how you fixed this big break that happened and how you made sure you navigated that through the entire frontline teams. I think the frontline teams are mostly concerned of, you know, how is this person going to interact with me? And so if you can share that experience and how you can relate back to them, I think that's always a helpful situation. Dr. Endo, you've already talked about this a little bit, but I don't know if you have anything else to add.
Yeah, thank you. I think a couple things piggybacking off of Dr. Billmeyer. You can leverage the situation to be an asset on your behalf, right? Being a newer graduate from an HSPAL residency program versus looking at it like it's a shortcoming on your behalf. So an example of that is you're newer coming out of residency and you oftentimes won't know who your opposition will be. But I think focusing on the fact that, hey, you are newer coming out of residency in terms of automation, technology, different applications you have experience bringing from another institution are all things you can speak to. And also, I would say being a newer generation leader, we typically are more familiar and experienced with technology in general. So we can speak to that. We can speak to how social media plays a role in marketing efforts. You can speak to how you can leverage different avenues to get innovative and creative, right? So I would leverage your skill set even outside of pharmacy to speak to how you could be a viable candidate. And so that's something that I like to tell mentees of mine and something that mentors of mine have told me as well. It's not, the interview setting is not limited to just pharmacy experience. And so that's an opportunity to really exemplify and speak to who you are as a candidate collectively. What are some of the things you've been involved in outside of pharmacy that might spark a conversation? Some of the things that might speak to who you are holistically. Bill Meyer mentioned it earlier, but really knowing your bread and butter, the person across the table from you cannot change that. Your bread and butter is what you're good at. Knowing that going into the interview setting is very important. It allows you to speak to what you bring to the table of value that is unique. And then I think this is more of a caveat to consider. It's not necessarily something that is actionable on a candidate's end, but I think understanding the background of your interviewer is also important, specifically the background of your boss. So is your boss HSPAL trained? If they are not, are they or have they been exposed to that level of training to recognize the value that you may bring to the table straight out of residency? So there are a lot of colleagues that I work with, they weren't HSPAL trained, but they have recognized the value of HSPAL training because they've had residents. They have colleagues who they are connected with. Versus maybe you're going to an institution that doesn't have an HSPAL program and maybe staff there aren't as familiar with that level of training. I would look at that as an opportunity. You can speak to what you can bring to the organization that maybe somebody else may not be able to do. So I would always, you know, just consider it an opportunity versus a shortcoming. Yeah, and I think that covers it. Really touching on your eagerness to learn, being quick to learn, and also highlighting your experiences that you have had leading teams, very important as a new grad, in my opinion.
Great. Thank you for those points. Those were great points that you both made. So as we get ready to wrap up, thank you, Dr. Bill Meyer. Thank you, Dr. Ando. Thank you, Dr. Shaw, for your incredibly valuable insights when answering these questions focused on job interviews. And I'm certain that your responses will be impactful for aspiring pharmacy leaders across the country. So I'm going to go ahead and hand it off back to Jake.
Big thank you to Dr. Brooks Patterson, Dr. Vishal Shah, Dr. Alyssa Billmeyer, and Dr. Kofi Ando for their excellent conversation surrounding the job interview process. Tune in for our next podcast hosted by PALRC when we talk about the first 90 days as a manager with Dr. Meg Byrne and Lauren Osajak and their special guests. Thank you for joining us. And if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to the @ASHP Official podcast.
Thank you for listening to ASHP Official, the voice of pharmacists advancing healthcare. Be sure to visit ashp.org/podcast to discover more great episodes, access show notes, and download the episode transcript. If you loved the episode and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe, rate, or leave a review. Join us next time on ASHP Official.